You're listening to Cold OD Messianic Congregation's weekly podcast. Our services are every Saturday morning at 11 a.m. For more information, like us on Facebook or visit our website at coldod.org.
So, if I had a title for 1 Samuel 27, which is, I'll ask you to turn there, 1 Samuel chapter 27, I'm back in David's life here. This, really the idea would just be David finds, this chapter deals with David finds refuge with the Philistines. David finds a refuge with the Philistines. And so some would say that this is a low period in David's life. I'm just looking back. We already announced everything, so I'm good. A valley, if you will, in David's life. We saw the same happen with Abraham. We saw it with Isaac. We saw it with Jacob. Life was not always smooth sailing. It was never smooth sailing, hardly ever smooth sailing. And it was not always making the best of choices for any of them, was it? David leaves the land of Israel to live among the Philistines. He's tired of the wearing cycle of Saul chasing him, being on the run, eluding Saul, hiding and homeless, using his smarts and military strategy, but ultimately God intervening and preserving him. But he's tired of that cycle. He's drained, and his drained state leads him to make, in my opinion, an unwise decision here. Now, I've read different interpretations, different commentaries that don't always see it that way, but I see it that way. Maybe you've heard this one. You can go to that first slide, Alex, please. I'm not going to talk about it. Maybe you've heard this one. If you can start the day without caffeine, if you can always be cheerful, ignoring aches and pains, if you can resist complaining and boring people with your troubles, if you can eat the same food every day and be grateful for it, if you can understand when your loved ones are just too busy to give you any time, if you can take criticism and blame without resentment, if you can conquer stress without medical help, if you can relax without liquor, if you can sleep without the aid of drugs, then you are probably the family dog. Have you heard that one? It's so true, isn't it? How many have a dog here? How many have a cat here? Okay, we used to have both, but we have just a dog. All right. Well, here, look at the first verse of 1 Samuel 27. It says, "Then David said in his heart," read it with me if you would, "Then David said in his heart, one day I'll be swept away by the hand of Saul." And I realize we're reading different translations. I'm reading TLV, Tree of Life. "There's nothing better for me than to escape immediately to the land of the Philistines. Then Saul will give up searching for me in all the territories." Okay, so I'll escape. So think of that first phrase, "Then David said in his heart," or maybe I'm misreading. Maybe it's this way. See if it reads this way. "Then the Lord said to David, you might be swept away by the hand of Saul." No, wait, is that in there? No. "David said in his heart, one day I'll be swept away by the hand of Saul." Who said it? David. Not Adonai said to David, but David said in his heart, his own thoughts and imaginations. Maybe out of a feeling of desperation, I think most surely so. He didn't trust Saul, and he had no reason to trust him, even though Saul said after the last episode that he's not going to go after him again. He was right in not trusting and not believing Saul. You can't trust like Yeshua. It's like Yeshua in John 2, I think it says he didn't commit himself to man. He didn't trust man because he knew what was in man. He didn't trust the flesh. But David's imagining this, and the word swept away is safa. Let's say safa. I have it up there for you. Safa, that's the root. It means, listen to this, it means to heap, like to heap up, to gather, to combine for a negative purpose is what the Hebrew word means. It can also come from sof. Let's say sof. That's the other word up there. End, the end. So let's think about this. Proverbs 29:25 says, "The fear of man will prove to be a snare." Fear of man is a snare. But one who trusts in Adonai will be kept safe. David did not take every thought captive to the obedience of Messiah here, in my opinion. 2 Corinthians 10:5. We entertain one thought or speculation, and then what happens? Another, and they heap upon each other, combining to bring negativity, worry, and fear. A false scenario takes over. Listen to 2 Corinthians 10:3 through 5. For though we walk in the flesh, we do not war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but divinely powerful for the destruction of fortresses. We are destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God. That's a battle in your mind, isn't it? It happens all the time with us. Destroying speculations and every lofty thing raised up against the knowledge of God, against knowing God, against what God, or could look at it against what God knows to be true. And we are taking every thought captive to the obedience of Messiah. David says in the second part of this verse, so there's nothing better for me to do than to escape immediately to the land of the Philistines. I was looking up the Hebrew just before I came. I hadn't checked that in that part. Ein li tov. Nothing good for me. Nothing good for me. I have no alternative. Ein, nothing, no alternative. Then to, in the Hebrew word, there's two, malat is mentioned twice. It's just doubled up here, translating here, escape immediately. He says, I've got to go. There's the pressure. There's the decision made out of haste. There's the decision made out of impulsively, out of just thinking, I'm trapped. But so many times we see in the scriptures the Lord said, the Lord giving direction. This is not one of those cases. This is David. It's me saying to my own soul, I've got to do something about this. I'm going to make a decision that may not be the best one. But I'm not even thinking that right now. I'm just thinking, I've got to get out of here. I've got to leave where Saul's going to catch me, keep chasing me. I'm tired of it, and understandably so in many respects. And it says, he's saying, you know, but that's what happens. One lying thought leads to another. A false premise leads to a false conclusion. This is my best option. This is my only option, really, David's thinking. And look at verses 2 and 3 then. So what happened is, so David rose and crossed over. He and the 600 men that were with him, his army, his warriors, to Achish, the son of Maoch, king of Gath. David stayed with Achish at Gath, he and his men, every man with his household, so they had their families with them, and David with his two wives, Ahinoam of Jezreel and Abigail of Carmel, Nabal's widow. When Saul learned about this, he no longer searched for him. Now, this is the second time that David flees to Achish of the Philistine king. The first time was in chapter 21, verses 11 through 16, where he went by himself and he was thrown out by the king. Remember, after he pretended to be insane. It was a really interesting story to really what happened. He pretended to be crazy, and it worked for him, and he escaped. He threw him out. Now he comes seeking political asylum with his useful 600 warriors, useful to the Philistines, to the king, and he's received favorably as basically a defector. Achish knows Saul is pursuing David as an enemy, so he obviously, it's from the context here, thinks it's okay. It's safe for him to receive David. But again, David reasons rather than trusts Adonai. Proverbs 3, 5, and 6, verses that I know one of the first few verses, I'm glad that someone had me memorize that, one of the first verses I learned, and probably you too. Trust in the Lord with what? All your heart. And what? Lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him. The word acknowledge is yada there. Know him. In all my ways, know the Lord. And he will what? Direct your paths. All right? Make your paths straight. The word for backslidden, I was looking it up in Hebrew. I was thinking of that word. It's a King James word, I think. but you know, most of my early years, King James memorizing. You know, backslidden, does anyone know that word? Maybe it's really backsliding. I was searching for it, it's only in the, but anyway, it's in, used by Jeremiah and Hosea especially. But the word, I was surprised, look at, is shuv. Let's say shuv. And I should do have it out somewhere in there. Keep going. There we go, perfect. All right, try it again, shuv. All right, it's the word we use for returning to God, teshuva, during high holidays. We talk, the theme is in, mentioned in Judaism, so strong, but it's to return. But guess what? The same word here is, this is the root of this word also. It also means not just to turn to God, it can mean to turn from God. And this is really what's happening. You know, many times there are dual words, dual meaning. You know, the word kadosh, for example, is what? Holy. Kedushah. Prostitute, yeah? Same word, you know, because God turns a prostitute, makes unholy, someone unholy, holy. He can make all things new. There's amazing, I've taught on that before. There's so many amazing Hebrew words that have double meanings, and redemption is all throughout it all. It's all redemption, redemptive. But here, David, had he already forgotten his past? What happened? How God had protected him here? Behold, the keeper of Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. Adonai is your keeper, Psalm 121. Adonai is the shadow at your right hand. The sun will not strike you by day, nor the moon by night. Adonai will protect you from how much evil? All evil. He will guard your life. Adonai will watch over your coming and your going from this time forth and forevermore. Psalm 121, I wrote a song for that, song to those, to the Psalm 121. You know, it's such a great psalm to pray for God's keeping power when you're concerned and need his protection, and quote God's word and remember it. And again, this is what I meant to have this in responsive readings, but I sent the wrong one. Isaiah 51, listen to these. These are a couple of my favorite verses. Isaiah 51, verses 12 and 13. God is speaking. I am the one who comforts you. Who are you that you should fear man who dies, or a son of man who is given up like grass? But you forgot Adonai, your maker, who stretched out the heavens and laid the foundations of the earth. Are you in constant dread all day because of the fury of the oppressor as he makes ready to destroy? But where is the fury of the oppressor? I love that. God says, where is it? You're imagining it. It's in your mind. It's something you have built up, but it's not something I'm worried about. Where? God says, you're in constant dread of the fury of the oppressor. As he's ready to destroy him. But where is it? Where is the fury of the oppressor? Listen, this is in David's mind. But David asks, so David makes this decision, and he goes to the Philistines. And then in verses 5 and 6, you know what he does? He's safely received by Achish, and now he asks for an estate to be given near the frontier, best we understand, away from Achish, probably his surveillance, so because he knows he'll be watching him, so an unwalled city in the country, and this is in return for his services. He's going to help him fight his wars with his tough guys, his military men, his 600. He's got 600 guys that are with him. And David is some warrior, I'll tell you. He is given Ziklag in the Negev. It's 11 miles southeast of Gaza, and he stays there 16 months. Let's go back to those couple maps just to get an idea. So there you see, it's on the west side there. In the Gaza area, where that top arrow is, I think that's it. I can't read it either. So go to the other one. The other one. Yeah, see where the Philistines are, and it's on that west side, so below. So that's the area where they are, and he's given an area there. I've bought three houses in that area. No, I'm just kidding. I wish I had the money to buy three. I wouldn't want to buy in that area, actually. Gaza, that's for sure. But anyway, I have my Jerusalem house and my Tel Aviv mansion, my apartment. You know. Oh, yeah. All right. May it be. All right, so, Lord, I have to have plans of what we're going to want to bring the good news there. So here we go. So listen to the Proverbs 21:1. How about this? The king's heart is like a stream of water, like the rivers of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wants. Isn't that a great verse? Proverbs 21:1. He turns it wherever he wants to. That's the king's heart. That's whoever's in power. It's in God's hands. And now David won't fight his own people. See, so he wants to be out of away enough from the king so that he can trick him, he can fool him. And when the king asks him, "Who are you fighting today? Who'd you go to war against your people?" And David's fooling him. He's not really fighting his people. Telling half lies, really, is what he's doing. And he's regularly asked, and David tells him he's raiding in the Negev region, but it's implying it's his own people, but it's really not when he's doing his raiding, and he is doing it. And so I think there's even a principle here, and that's, by the way, in verses 8 through 11, all these verses, they went up, and the Gizrites and the Amalekites, and et cetera, et cetera. And David attacks him, verse 9, attacked the region. And the king asks him, verse 10, "Where have you raided today?" And David would reply, "Against the Negev." And he mentioned these different things. Here's a principle, I think. When we're outside of God's will for our lives, we end up lying and deceiving. One wrong move leads to another. Or Isaiah 30, verse 1 says, we add sin to sin. "Oy to the rebellious children," Isaiah 30 says, "who carry out a plan, but not mine, make an alliance, but not my of my spirit, and they add sin to sin. Go down to Egypt, did not consult me," God said, "to take refuge in Pharaoh's stronghold, seek shelter in Egypt's shadow," similar in many ways. Or Isaiah 31:1, the next chapter, he says, "Oy to those going down to Egypt for help. They're relying on horses, trusting in chariots, since they're many, and in horsemen, since they're very mighty, but they don't look to the Holy One of Israel, nor seek Adonai." Now, that David usually did. I think he just got really weary of doing it. He always sought. He did seek the Lord. He did want to. But I think he just got worn out, and he gave in. He says, "I've got to go to the Philistines and help them," but he's not going to fight his people. But look at the last verse of this chapter. It says in verse 12, "So it was his practice all the time. He stayed in the country of Philistines." Verse 12, "Then Achish trusted David, saying, 'He has certainly made himself abhorrent to his people Israel. Therefore, he will be my vassal forever.'" I don't know why it translates it vassal. Not even sure what a vassal is, but a vessel or vassal. Dr. Sean would know what a vassal is. But it's the Hebrew word is eved. It's servant. I got it up there, Alex, yeah, if you can find it. Want to say eved? Eved, okay. He says, he's going to be my servant. Achish, the Philistine kings, trusted him. He says, he's made himself abhorrent. The word ba'ash there, you can say ba'ash, yeah. It just means a foul smell to arouse disgust. He says, his people hate him now, because he thinks that David's attacking him all this time. He says, and so he'll be my servant forever. And David fools Achish, making him think he had become an enemy of his own people, both Israel and Judah. But now he's seen as his servant forever. Whose servant are you? Whose servant am I? To whom do I belong? Who really owns me? I certainly wouldn't want it to be that a Philistine king. A godless king. 2 Corinthians 6, 14 through 16, where we read earlier, "Don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers. For what part?" Now, it's not talking about we're to be salt and light, and I hope we have many people that we reach out to that we are, you know, that we're friends with, that we minister as unbelievers. That's the whole point. We're not to go and be hermits. We're to be in the midst. But who are we yoked with? It says, "Don't be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what partnership is there between righteousness and lawlessness? Or what fellowship does light have with darkness? What harmony does Messiah have with Belial? Or what part does a believer have in common with an unbeliever? what agreement does God's temple have with idols? So David yoked himself with unbelievers here. Instead of trusting the Lord, he trusted in his ability to maneuver and deceive like Jacob his dad. Partnership, fellowship, harmony, commonality, agreement. What does it mean for me, for you, or for me? Partnering maybe in questionable or illegal business ventures. The god of mammon, greed and covetousness, more, meaning I need more, more, more. That's an idol. Worshipping, making money over winning souls. Could be all sorts of sensual parties and filth and infidelity. I don't know what it means for you or for me. I can answer for myself what it would mean. I'm no different, maybe, than my unbelieving friends or coworkers. I gossip, I slander, just like they do. I'm saying if I do that, if I'm partnering with the world, I'm no different. They got the world's way is speak evil. You're different. No, we stand out because we say, I'm not going to repeat that thought, repeat that about someone else. No, sorry, don't want to listen to it. Sorry, really, not interested. Say something positive. It could be profanity that we use, you know, using it the same way someone else does, or cheating, or lying, or scheming, or drinking like others do, or gravitating to the strong and the beautiful rather than and ignoring the weak and the unattractive. You know, God wants us to, in the spirit, we don't gravitate just to the strong and attractive, but to the unattractive many times to minister to. Who are my closest friends? Ask yourself that. Believers or unbelievers? And as I said, I certainly want to have friends and be light and salt and light and be praying for people, of course. But I'm talking about who are we closest? Who are my close confidants? They should be those who follow. I like Revelation 14:4. They follow the Lamb wherever he goes. Or rather than followers of the culture, wherever the culture goes. 6:16 through 18 of 2 Corinthians says, for we are the temple of the living God. Just as God said, I will dwell in them and walk among them. I will be their God. They'll be my people. Therefore, come out from among them and be separate, says Adonai. Touch no unclean thing. Then I will take you in. I will be a father to you, and you shall be my sons and daughters, says Adonai. I think he's talking to believers. So I thought, I'm already his son and daughter. Yes, but you don't have the same level, quality of intimacy that you can have or I can have when I make a decision to walk with the Lord, fully for the Lord, and really be separate. And again, I don't want it to be misunderstood because we don't isolate ourselves, but we walk differently, right? We have a different walk in the midst of it. And we love and don't judge, but we're totally stand out because we're different. So go for the gold by going after God. Yoke yourself to Yeshua and partner with him and those who are doing the same. 2 Timothy 2:22 says, flee youthful desires and follow or pursue righteousness, faithfulness, love, and shalom with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart. And so I'll finish with this. David is human. He's not perfect. He makes this decision to flee to Achish, however you say his name, Achish, I have to look it up, under duress after many close encounters with death at the hands of Saul. God had rescued him several times, but he didn't trust Saul's promise to cease pursuing him, and rightly so, and he didn't want to count on God's intervention again. Not good, I don't think. He should have. So we too will not always make the best of decisions. But God does not abandon us. Just as he still protected David, he protects us if our hearts are after him. You know that when David in the next chapter, we'll learn next week, that he has to fight really against his people. He's put in a position where he's going to have to fight, and And it's like, there's no way out for David now. He's going to have to fight his own people for the king, for King Achish. And God intervenes. You can read and find out how, through the Philistines, the people. And he doesn't have to. God still protected him, even though he had made this choice and got himself in this predicament. God still was watching over him. But we could say, what would have happened if David hadn't fled to the Philistines? We will never know. What would have happened if you or I had not made certain decisions where we did not fully trust the Lord and took an easier or even aberrant path? What if we had taken a different job? Do you ever ask that? Oh, if I'd only take, or a different path. I hope you don't say, what if I'd married a different person? Because God's will is that you married the right person. When it happened, you're married to the God. That's God's perfect will for you. But we don't know if we had said, I could have been in a different area. Listen, it doesn't help. A verse comes to mind. Ecclesiastes Kohelet 7:20 says, do not say, why were the former days better than this? For it is not from wisdom that you ask that. Don't say like, oh, if only this, if only that. It's never from wisdom that you ask that. That's from the enemy. It's not. God works with us now. God works into a beautiful, and he can weave everything together into a beautiful, perfect plan if we submit ourselves, surrender ourselves completely to him. What we do know is that God keeps those who love him. He who keeps Israel neither slumbers nor sleeps. Now to the one, Jude 24, now to the one who is able to keep you from stumbling and to present you blameless before his presence of his glory with great joy. And then this verse, which nobody knows, everybody really knows this. I don't know how to say it, but I don't want you to say it like you know it. Hear it fresh. Now we do know that 80% things work together for the good. That's in the Greek. 80% things work together for good for those who love God and are called according to what? His purpose. Wow. How many things? Thank you. Thank you for correcting me. All things work together. Let's say it. All things work together for good for those. There's a condition. Love God. I love God. I'm after you like they. Lord, I love God. I have you. You are my first love. Revelation 2:4, my first love. Listen, he's called us to his purpose. His purpose. Not our purpose. It's like that verse, people say, delight yourself in the Lord. He'll give you the desires of your heart. I think it's Psalm 37:4. So, if I want to get whatever I want, all I have to do is delight myself in the Lord, right? It's not what it says. Delight yourself and make him your everything, and then guess what? He puts his desires in my heart, and so yes, I'll get what I desire because his desires are in my heart now. That's what it really means. We are those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his son so that he might be the firstborn among many brothers and sisters. Father, we thank you for this episode in David's life.